Welcome to the Reformed Media Review. My name is Camden Busey. I'm here with Jim Cassidy, and today we're going to be speaking about the latest issue of the Westminster Theological Journal. Jim, what's in this issue of the journal here?
Well, we have a chock full issue here, really, Camden. Some great stuff. And the first one, the lead article, which everybody, I think, just needs to get a hold of and read through because it's a fascinating read. For those of you who are into conspiracy theories, you might really, really enjoy this one. Even though it is a historical piece, it's not a wacky conspiracy theory, but it's by Jim Scott. Who works out of the OPC Home Missions and Christian Education Committee office in Philadelphia, wrote a piece called Machen's Lost Work on the Presbyterian Conflict, Part 1, the Historical Evidence. And his contention in there is in very, very
short. The Edwin Ryan book theory?
Is the Edwin Ryan book, The Presbyterian Conflict, was actually taken by Edwin Ryan from Machen after his death and published under Edwin's name. So, but that the bulk of the work is actually Machen's work, and Edwin published it without giving credit to Machen. So, yeah. And it's in two parts. The first part is the historical evidence, which is in this issue. The second part will come out, I think, in the spring, which will talk about the internal literary evidence. But Scott makes a, and that's his last name, makes a great argument historically from the evidence. It is a very responsible historical piece, and one of those pieces that just make you go, very, you know, very, very compelling.
I've heard this theory a number of times, of, you know, in back channels and whatnot, and it is interesting to think, because apparently Ryan was the first one into Machen's office after Machen passed away. Plus, it was apparently well known at the time that Machen was working on such a document or such a
That's
book.
Right.
So there's a lot of compelling reasons, but there are also some rather convenient reasons to charge Ryan with such a heinous crime, because he flipped back to the mainline church later on, didn't he?
He did, and
so we always want to castigate the guy that.
Well, yeah, I mean, he showed no love to the OPC too when he went back and defected, but you know, at the end of the day, this is not a revenge piece. This
no,
is
no.
a historical argument. So, and it's going to have to, you know, if somebody's going to disagree with, and you could bet that there'll be somebody wanting to uphold the Ryan legacy who will, you know, want to contend this. But you're going to have to deal with the evidence, and you know, Scott does a good job of
interesting. Well, that's certainly worth the read on its own, in my opinion. What else do we have in this issue?
Okay, so a couple of other articles where I'll mess up, I think, the Latin here. But the next piece is by John James on an examination of the homotimia in St. Basil's the Great's, St. Basil the Great's on the Holy Spirit and Contemporary Implications, an argument for the equal glory of the Spirit with the Father and the Son, basically, from St. Basil's, Basil the Great's writings on the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Good patristic piece. Let's see. Another one. Maybe you could help me out with the pronunciation of this guy's name. We need Jeff on to help out with this stuff. But Ambrosiaster. I don't know if I got that name or not, an ancient church father on justification by faith alone and his commentaries on the Pauline epistles, a compelling piece, I think, trying to show that justification by faith alone is not Johnny come lightly in the Reformation, which, of course, Luther argued in his day as well, that this he's just going back to the patristics on this one, back to the sources, ad fontes.
Ad fontes, yes.
The next article is by Jeff Fisher, The Disregarded Doctrine of the Atonement in the Exposition of Hebrews by John Acolampadius.
Oh, yeah.
And a very good piece, works from Diane Poitras's dissertation work and now published piece on Acolampadius. And anyway, very good, compelling piece explicating Acolampadius's Doctrine of the Atonement substitution as a substitution. Dictionary Atonement.
Mm-hmm.
Guy Debras, I don't know if that's how you pronounce him. You know, again, I'm the guy who's can't pronounce stuff. And the Apocrypha by Wes Brendenhoff is the next piece. And then one of my if Jim Scott's article wasn't in this issue, this one, the next one would be my yeah. highlight. Which is Nathan Shannon's work on Christianity and Evidentialism, mm-hmm. Van Til and John Locke on Facts and Evidence. What a great piece, shedding light on Van Til and his understanding of the use of evidences, his transcendental method. Nathan goes and dispels all sorts of myths as to what presuppositionalism means. And I think with Scott Oliphant's book coming out on covenantal apologetics, I think that those two will be necessary. Oliphant's book and then Nate's article here, I think, is helpful 1-2 punches to set the record straight on understanding Van Til. Right? You'd be surprised how many people actually get Van Til wrong.
On evidences,
On evidences and on his transcendental method, just what presuppositionalism is mm-hmm. and what it's not. And of course, Oliphant has been arguing that we need to move away from the term presuppositionalism, more towards the notion of covenantal apologetics, and I think that he's got a good point there, because of what a presupposition has become known as more broadly and generally.
And the number of other people that are considered presuppositional apologists. There's a wide variety. Bonson lists a number in his book, Presuppositional Apologetics Stated and Defended. And he talks about, figures like Carnell and Schaefer and Gordon Clark. They're all presuppositional apologists, but they differ substantially from Van Til's approach. And so I think an entirely new term is warranted myself, and I prefer to use it whenever I describe Van Til's method to others.
Yeah, I think if Lane were with us, I think he'd say something along the lines of, presuppositionalism has been commandeered by the rationalists and the neo-evangelicalism, neo-evangelicalists. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's right. And, and Oliphant and I think Nathan here are kind of reclaiming Van Til for who he really was as a confessional, covenantal, reformed apologist. So, mm-hmm. Good stuff.
Anything else in the issue?
The next one is by Eugene Schlesinger, and I apologize to our listeners if one of them happened to be the authors and I messed up your name. But
Jim's from New Jersey. I think people understand that.
Yeah, just blame it on my accent. His article is "Use Your Illusion: How Reformed Sacramental Theology Makes Sense of Sacramental Language in John 3 and 6.
It's kind of a Guns N' Roses title.
Yes. very, very cool. Arguing the bread of life discourse as being sacramental language. I'm not persuaded of that exegesis yet, and Schlesinger didn't convince me in his article, but it's a very, very good, well-written persuasive type piece, even though I wasn't persuaded, but maybe you will be. Then other are biblical studies. Robert Gonzalez wrote Faults of Our Fathers, The Spread of Sin and the Patriarchal Narratives and Its Implications. Peter Myers, Cognitive Linguistics and the Tripartite Division of the Law, wow. Which is kind of a hot topic again, trying to understand the three parts of the three divisions of the law, the three types of law, that there are: moral, ceremonial, civil, etc., which has come under attack in more recent days as being an artificial distinction. A couple of works that have come out, and the name of the guy who just wrote a book on this thing, it was his dissertation. I'm looking for his book through my office. And I can't find it right now, is the guy who has come back and kind of made a renewed argument for the reformed understanding of the three types of law. Are you recalling, Camden?
I don't recall the guy's name, but I have the book, and what I read of it was excellent. It's a Dutch man. It was a Dutch name, if I recall correctly. I'm just, forgive us for not remembering. If Nick was here, he'd be able to spout it off immediately because he loved that book.
This is his topic too. And I'm just looking around for it. And, well, anyway, if we find it, maybe we could put it in the show notes or something down the line. But anyway, this article kind of goes hand in hand with that. And then the next one is Thirsting for God, the Levitical Inheritance Motif in the Apocalypse by Samuel Rico. Some abstracts of recent WTS doctoral dissertations.
They always put those in there.
Yeah, these are fun. I love reading these because, you know, these dissertations get cranked out every year, and oftentimes you don't even know that they're
right
out. But Fletcher wrote the wilderness motif in John 3.
That's right.
1 through
he
21.
Graduated.
Mm-hmm.
My Greek teacher.
Yep. An exposition and examination of Theodoret, of Cyrus, of Cyrus's Christology by Joseph Diaggi. Is that correct? I don't know. Also, from the Lament of David to the Prayer of Christ and His Passion, a canonical process approach to Psalm 3 by Ying Zhu. Differentiated Commonality, another Van Til dissertation. Van Til's Reconstruction of the Doctrine of Common Grace by Alfred M. Mully. And then some book reviews. I won't go through each of the book reviews. And then some short notices. So, like I said, this is a chock full issue.
Yeah.
There are, as I'm looking, about 10 book reviews and then 4 short notices. So the issue just keeps going on and on, all very helpful type stuff. If I could just highlight one very important book review. If you don't read all 10 book reviews, and you don't have to, by any, nobody's going to think less of you, but make sure you read Dr. Poitras's review of Van Hooser's book, Remythologizing Theology.
Oh, wow.
Jim Dolezel wrote a fine review of the same book in the Confessional Presbyterian Journal last year.
Right.
Answered by Kevin Van Hooser in the same issue. And here, Vern Poitras, I think, does a masterful job of its Christian, gracious, generous type of review, which is at the same time very precise and biblical in its critique. Dr. Poitras really does lead the way in showing us how to be critical as Christian scholars while at the same time upholding love for the brethren. And, it is an example of masterful scholarship and Vantillian analysis of a book which has gotten a lot of attention and is being used broadly. I think a critique which is important for us all to pay attention to. If you don't read any others, make sure you read that. Don McLeod has a couple of reviews of 2 books about American Christianity, particularly with regard to Princeton and such. Princeton after the split of 1929. Yeah. I can commend those pieces to you. Very fine pieces, and the journal issue altogether, well worth picking up.
And what's the issue and volume number for the sake of reference?
It's the fall 2012 issue, volume 74, number 2.
Great. So that's the Westminster Theological Journal. You can go to WTS.edu for more information about subscribing to that piece if you'd like to get a copy of it, or check your theological library. It's found throughout the country. I even found it at Temple University once. So you can find the Westminster Theological Journal and pick up the latest issue for that. This has been the Reformed Media Review. Visit us online at reformedforum.org for more information. Thanks for listening.